Welcome to the Apex Church podcast. Thanks for listening and we hope you enjoy today's message. Be sure to check out our website at www.apexchurch.org.uk and let us know you've been listening. Now prepare your heart to hear a word from God today.
Hello, I'm Lynn. Before I start, I just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed our Mother's Day services over the years. It's hard to celebrate a day like Mother's Day. For some, you may be desperate to be a mum, have lost your own mum, or for other reasons. But here at Apex Church, every woman is made to feel special, whether you're a mum, a daughter, a grandma, a sister, an auntie. We're all loved by our church and by our Heavenly Father. So, a little bit about me. I got married last year, and my husband Ross and I are expecting our first child in August. Over the past 10 years, I've been a primary teacher and an auntie to two nieces and three nephews, so children have been a big part of my life. Before meeting my husband, I was single for a long time. I'd longed to be a mum for years. If it was my plan, I would have met my husband that I prayed for years ago and had children in my 20s, but that wasn't God's plan for my life. God's timing is perfect, and when I realised how he'd answered my prayers when I met Ross, I knew that God's faithfulness would carry on into our future together. When Phyllis asked me to speak about a woman in the Bible whose story I related to, Hannah immediately came to mind. In 1 Samuel, it tells the story of a man named Elkanah who had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah did not. Peninnah was not very kind to Hannah. She would taunt her because God never blessed her with any children. For years I'd prayed for a husband and to be a mum one day. Sometimes I felt as if it would never come, and the pain of longing is hard when you look around and compare yourself to the lives of others. By my late 20s, most of my friends had children. When it's all you've ever wanted, it's hard to be content in the season you're in. Hannah also longed to be a mum. In 1 Samuel 1, verse 10 to 11, it says, Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord, and she made this vow, O Lord of heaven's armies, if you look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you. He will be yours for his entire lifetime. Instead of putting my focus on the waiting and the longing, I tried hard to thank God for who he was and what he had done, for everything that I had, and I held on to his promises. Hannah's prayer of thanksgiving in the Bible shows how she prayed. In 1 Samuel 2, verse 1 to 2, it says, Then Hannah prayed, My heart rejoices in the Lord. The Lord has made me strong. Now I have an answer for my enemies. I rejoice because you rescued me. No one is holy like our Lord. There is no one beside you. There is no rock like our God. Maybe you're longing for a spouse, a baby, a job, a good friendship. Don't look on what others have with jealousy or comparison, but instead be thankful for the season you're in. God has you here for a purpose. In the waiting can be a time to draw close to God and follow his plan for your life. Then Hannah gave birth to a son, Samuel. She gave Samuel back to the Lord. He grew up in the temple. Hannah went on to have two daughters and three sons. Samuel grew in favor with God and people. He grew up to make a big difference in Israel. As mothers, the most powerful tool in your possession is prayer, both prayer for your children. From the moment the baby starts forming until our dying breath, praying for your children and their walk with the Lord is vital. I felt this firsthand, knowing that my parents have prayed for me my whole life. Prayers of protection, thanksgiving, prayers into their future, and for your children to make a big difference in their world. Through prayer, we are dedicating our children to the Lord, desiring to see them serve him in whatever he calls them to do. Remember to offer up praise and thanksgiving for who he is and all that he has done through you and your child. In Psalms 37, verse 4, it says, Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. The very fact that Hannah went to the house of the Lord to ask God to give her a child, despite her barrenness, shows trust in God, who can accomplish all things. and that nothing is too hard for him. Hannah's faith did not waver. This time around, she seemed more determined with prayers and petitions. We need to be like Hannah, giving our children or other blessings and giftings that God has given us back to him. In James 1, verse 17, it says, "Every good and perfect gift comes from above." The most important thing a mother can do is first and foremost take care of her spiritual health. When a mom is spiritually healthy, she will look upon her role as a mother through the lens of eternity. She will fully understand the love that shines through God, even in tough times, praising him for all of his ways. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, church. I wish all wonderful mums and mums-to-be a very blessed Mother's Day. Today, I want to share with you about a woman who had a checkered past, and because of her faith in God, she met God's grace. She not only saved herself, but her family, through her faith in the true God of the Israelites. She was a prostitute in the Canaanite city of Jericho, and she is none other than Rahab. We are going to see how her faith and obedience in God changed her life. According to the narrative in Joshua chapter 2, before the conquest of Canaan, Joshua sends two men as spies to see the land, and these two men end up on Rahab's doorstep. The king of Jericho sends a word to Rahab saying that she should hand over the two spies over to them. But Rahab, instead of handing over the spies to the king's men, she hides them under the stalks of flax on a roof and finds a way to escape them too. Then she asks them for a favor. She says, since she has saved their lives, she asks them to spare her and their family from being destroyed when the Israelites took over Jericho. Why did Rahab really save these two men? So let's read from Joshua chapter 2, verses 8 to 14. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given us this land, that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the sea, Red Sea, for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives," the men assured her. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land." Now, why did Rahab truly save these two men? Rahab had not seen our God dividing the Red Sea, but she has heard what God has done for the Israelites to escape out of Egypt. And she had also heard of what had happened to the two kings of the Amorites. These events led her to believe that God, which the Israelites worshipped, was the true God and in heaven, true God in heaven above and on earth below. She simply believed. Her belief and obedience changed her whole identity. From Rahab's story, we learn that trusting God and depending on him one day at a time builds our confidence in God and in his plans too. The two men said to her to tie a scarlet cloth on a window, and no one of her family members should go out of the house. Then their lives would be spared. Only because she believed in God and obeyed what the men said, she and her family were saved on that day. The smallest step of faith can activate a mighty miracle, and it did in Rahab's life too. What was Rahab worthy of? Nothing but she was a prostitute. But what God had done in her life teaches us that there is no one alive who is beyond God's ability to redeem, and God's forgiveness, it's based only on his unconditional love and not on our worthiness. Rahab's story teaches us that anyone who honors and respects God becomes the object of his care and purpose. Today, when we look around us, we are surrounded by so many uncertainties and challenges. Just as Rahab believed in God, and her obedience provided the way from sin and despair to a hope and a future. So let us also, like Rahab, continue to believe and walk in faith in God and in obedience for ours and our family's sake, because only then our future, which is secured by God's grace alone, can give us hope and a place in God's family. Rahab's history became part of a testimony of God's goodness in her life. So today, my friends, I would like to encourage us all that let us too make our history to become part of our testimony of God's goodness in our lives. God bless us all.
Well, good morning, and having Lynn and Raj shared so well with us this morning so far, it's really spoken to my heart, and I hope and pray that it resonated with you as well. This morning, I'm going to start by reading from Mark chapter 14, from verse 3. Now, Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon, a man Jesus had healed of leprosy. As he was reclining at the table, a woman came into the house with an alabaster flask, filled with the highest quality of fragrant and expensive oil. She came to Jesus, and with a gesture of extreme devotion, she broke the flask and poured out the precious oil over his head. But some were highly indignant when they saw this, and they complained to one another, saying, "What a total waste! It could have been sold for a great sum, and the money could have benefited the poor." So they scolded her harshly. Jesus said to them, "Leave her alone. Why are you so critical of this woman? She has honored me with this beautiful act of kindness. You will always have the poor whom you can help whenever you want, but you will not always have me. When she poured the fragrant oil over me, she was preparing my body in advance of my burial. She has done all that she could to honor me. I promise you that as this wonderful gospel spreads all over the world, the story of her lavish devotion to me will be mentioned in memory of her." Here we read that Jesus was enjoying a meal in Bethany, enjoying a meal with his friends. Whilst he was there, Mary entered that room and had the jar, the alabaster jar, with this precious oil in it. She broke that flask and poured the contents onto Jesus' head. Then she anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. This was an extravagant demonstration of her love for Jesus that we'll take a look at today. And in the contents of that flask was a very expensive perfume that was used in the embalming process, so precious that only the wealthy could afford it. It was worth around 300 pence, which in those days would have been a whole year's salary. The house was filled with the odour of the perfume. We read in John 12, verse 3, this was such an extravagant gift. And what did this demonstrate? Why did Mary do this? Was she trying to impress the people who had gathered for the feast? Was she trying to prove just how much she loved Jesus? I believe in reading this, that this extravagant gesture was to let Jesus see just how much he meant to her, how much she valued him. That day, she was making a statement. She was making a statement about her commitment to him. When she broke the flask, there was no going back. Everything in that flask had to be used. Her commitment to him was unconditional and complete.
She was making a statement about his value to her. She had possibly saved for a long time to have this jar of perfume. And when she broke the flask and spilled out its contents, she was telling Jesus, "You mean more to me than anything in the world." She was making a statement about her value to herself. By this task, Mary was demonstrating that Jesus meant more to her than her own reputation. She sacrificed her pride in order to serve him. She was saying, "I love you so much that I don't care in this moment what anyone thinks of my expression of this extravagant love." And there was two things she did to prove this the truth. Women didn't wear their hair down in public at this time, but Mary didn't worry about that in the moment. She didn't worry about what people were going to think. She wanted to express her love of the Lord. And secondly, only slaves washed the feet of others. When a person came to your house, either there was water left out for you, or if there were slaves, they would wash your feet for you. Mary took the place of a slave before her Lord. She humbled herself before him and served him because she loved him. She was making a statement about the value of her possessions. To Mary, nothing in the world was more valuable to her as Jesus. And I just reflected on that. There should be nothing in my life more valuable than Jesus and my relationship with him. She loved him with an extravagant love, and everything she possessed was his anyway. She loved the Lord more than she loved her things. She broke the flask and poured out every drop because of the love she had for him. She was making a statement about his worthiness to be worshipped and served. And why did she do this? Well, she did this because she was thankful. Thankful that Jesus was her Saviour, saved her from her sin, and she was full of love for him. She had also seen Jesus raise her dead brother Lazarus from the dead. She had seen that miracle, and she had every reason to be a dedicated follower of Christ. What she did in that one act of worship demonstrates this to us. Mary, more than the disciples at this point, knew and believed that Jesus was going to die on the cross. As far as she knew, this could have been the last time she would have been able to serve and honour him. We've read how Jesus was at the centre of Mary's life, not just in this short passage, but just exactly how much he meant to her. This act wasn't just because of a chance encounter. This happened because of what Jesus had done in Mary's life, in the life of her family, and she recognised what Christ meant to her. Is Jesus at the centre of what you do today? Are you loving him unconditionally? Are we demonstrating each day exactly what he means to us? As women of God, when we surrender our lives to him, something beautiful happens. It's the start of a beautiful relationship when we place him at the center of what we do each day, whether we're at work, whether we're at home with our little ones, whatever place you find yourself in each day. When we put Jesus in the center, you get that shift. You have a focus on who he is rather than who we are. So it's to be less of us and more of him. And when I pray in the morning, "Jesus, let you be at the center of what I do today," my day is better because of that, because I've put him first, because I choose to honor him in my home and at work and out with work with friends. And I pray that each one of you can feel that in your relationship with Jesus too. And I've just been thinking as well, when you think about when Mary spilled out the perfume, just the whole smell that must have filled that room, that sweet fragrance. And there's a verse in 2 Corinthians 2:15, and it speaks about our lives are like a Christ-like fragrance rising up to God. And let's keep centered on Christ and carry his fragrance everywhere we go. I want to be a woman who carries the fragrance of Jesus and that people can see and just feel that there's something different. And I pray each one of us here this morning, we can each carry the fragrance of Jesus in our day-to-day, with our children, in our schools, in our homes, wherever you find yourself. We can carry Jesus' love and let people smell the fragrance of Jesus within each one of us.